3, 2, 1.
Welcome to It's Fabulous!
True personal story.
Exfabula is a Milwaukee nonprofit committed to strengthening community bonds through the art of storytelling.
And it is time for Exfabula Radio on 89.7 WUWM. We're here every weekend as part of Lake Effect Weekend. I'm Bruce Winter. Leah Delaney, the co-founder of Milwaukee's Exfabula, is here bringing stories from past story slams with a theme in mind. And today, that theme would be...
Very salacious today. It's Ooh. Family secrets.
Ooh. Dun, dun, dun. Everybody has those.
Yeah, they do. You know, I've come to the realization that most everyone, and I'm not speaking for everybody in our listening audience, but most everyone probably feels like their family is like the most dysfunctional family that ever existed on the planet Earth. And then you come to realize later on, like, oh, everybody shares in the dysfunction.
Yeah.
And such. So it's kind of nice to know we all share that. So today I did bring a couple of stories in regards to families withholding, as it were. Let's start out today with our first story from Sue Blostein. She told us originally at our Hidden Story Slam back in October of 2016. Here is Sue Blostein.
Okay, in early September in 1969, my sister was ready to go away to college, my oldest sister. And I was 13, coming up on 14 years old, and the whole family drove her to Ohio to school. And we got to look around the campus, and I got to look at the dorm room, and I was pretty impressed. She was getting ready to begin her independent life, and I wasn't so happy that I was going to go back to New York and start ninth grade. But... a few weeks into the semester, her letters home started coming, and she would write letters to the whole family, but she also wrote letters to me, and she would tell me about all her new experiences, about the guys she was meeting, new friends, interesting friends, music, smoking pot and hashish. And so some of these things clearly had to be hidden from our parents. And, you know, we were all coming of age during the 60s, and that's almost like a cliche now. You know, the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, the Summer of Love, Woodstock. It was a very stimulating time. And our family had dinner together every night, and we traveled together. You know, and at that time, the standard was one TV in the house in the living room. So we all watched the same news and the same programs together. So I think you could say that as a family, you know, we did process all the things that were going on. We did talk with limits. We talked about politics and we talked about current events. Some other things that would be of interest to a teenager, like sex and drugs, no. No. My parents were kind of the original practitioners, I think, of don't ask, don't tell. And they did get their messages across about what it was, what people in our family were, what we weren't, what we did, what we didn't, but it was all in a very coded, very roundabout way. So as the topic of kids and drugs got media attention, you know, my mother or father would never just sit down and say, I'll kill you if I catch you smoking pot. Nothing like that. It'd be more like we were in the car going somewhere, and my mother would tell us about a conversation she had with a colleague, and she'd say, oh, I told them that my kids have inner resources. They don't need drugs. So I'm in the back seat. I'm like, okay. Okay, I got the message, because it's really a shameful thing not to have inner resources. It's a very bad reflection on your family. But, you know, I also got the bigger message, which was, you cannot talk to us about this. And because of that, I developed a habit of being very self-reliant and kind of furtive. And that can be kind of lonely, furtive, because once we had this unspoken agreement that we wouldn't spoil my parents' feeling that our family didn't have the same challenges or the same failure as other families, that's like a code of silence. And so other things like boys and birth control, I was very furtive about it. And that, but meanwhile, my sister wanted to help me get initiated into this great world. So at college, she made a candle, a scented candle, embedded a lump of hashish in it, and sent it to me. And of course, I got my prize. I waited for a night. My parents were out. I took a jackknife. I dug it out. But here's the anticlimax. I don't even remember when I smoked it or how. I never became a pothead because I do have inner resources. But I have to say that one thing I learned is that because I had to keep certain things hidden, I would just tell myself, I'm strong, I can handle this, I have this under control. And in truth, as my teen years progressed, there were things I handled by myself that I really probably shouldn't have. And so what I learned was hidden things, just because they're hidden, they're still there.
And that was Sue Blostein with her story that she originally told at our Hidden Story Slam.
Yeah, always good to learn from an older sibling.
Indeed. Speaking of learning,
yeah,
X-Fabula has partnered up with Sculpture Milwaukee. Last weekend and this weekend, so keep this in mind, we've teamed up with them to give tours of the outdoor sculptures on Wisconsin Avenue. And so we have a couple of storytellers, Elaine Molly and Sean Mitchell, that are telling personal stories that relate to the public sculptures outside on the street. So It's a fantastic tour. I did it last weekend. It's
good
great
stuff, eh?
I
have stopped and read some of the little, history or the little descriptions of the
right.
piece by the artist. And that's fascinating, but having stories to go along with it.
Yeah, it's just such a great experience.
Yeah.
And it's such a good bang for your buck. So if you want more details about how to get tickets to that, go to xfabula.org and get your ticket, because Saturday and Sunday this weekend is your last chance.
Okay.
All right.
Gotcha.
So we're going to move on to a different spin on our theme today of family secrets. Let's listen to Rochelle Fritch, who told this particular true personal story at our Milwaukee Monumental Slam.
When my daughter was 8 years old, I realized that history was repeating itself, and not in a good way. You see, when I was her age and I didn't know who I was or who my people were, my grandparents had died long before I was born. My daughter's case, she didn't know my parents. They died long before she was here. She had a little bit of information. And that information came from boxes, I like to think, that I keep in my head. And the boxes are full of memories, full of stories that I heard. And up until that time, I just kind of scratched the surface of the stuff that was in the box. I didn't go down too deep. So I could tell her about my mom, her grandma. And she hears those stories. And I could tell her about her great-grandmother, my grandmother, whose name was Mary Jane Godley. She knew, because I told her, that Mary Jane was not from Milwaukee. She was from Missouri. And so at this point, realizing she's not knowing really who her people were, because I didn't really know who our people were, I had to keep digging in that box and go down towards the uncomfortable stuff, see what memories I could scrape out. And so the memories I could scrape out were of conversations between my mom and her sister. And they would talk about Milwaukee at the time they were growing up. Way back then, there was a streetcar. And every Saturday, my grandmother would take my mom and her sister and the rest of the siblings on the streetcar to the library on Wisconsin Avenue. And if I think about that too long, it would make me kind of ticked off, because I'm like, this library knows more about my family than I do. The stairs have felt the footsteps of my mom when she was a child, and the walls know the sound of my grandmother's voice. But it just kind of spurred me on. So I kept thinking and kept remembering what were those conversations. And one of the things that popped up was a conversation about some relative named French Godley. And I'd hear them talk, and it'd be loud back and forth. Geneva, you remember? Ooh, French. Ooh, girl. Those were some wild people. And when they knew I was listening, they'd start whispering. So the only thing I knew was that there was somebody named French Godley, and they were wild people. I did not know what this meant. So I went to Google. So I Googled French Godley and Missouri, and I hoped for the best. I clicked, and there were pages upon pages of results with French Godley and Missouri. And for a second, I thought to myself, is this like the library on Wisconsin Avenue? The internet knows more about who I am and where I came from than I do? And then I thought, this is great. There's got to be images. And I imagined myself in that split second clicking on the images and seeing his face and calling my daughter over and going, look, baby, look at his eyes. Those are your eyes. You see the cut of his jaw? Turn your head and you can see your face in that too. I clicked on the images with that hope, and what I found instead was this blue thumbnail, and it was curious. So I opened it, and what it was a disc. It was maybe about 3 feet across, and it was royal blue and shiny, and it had an inscription on it, and there were the names, French Godley, and underneath that, Wiley Godley. This is a relative I didn't know. Or Will Godley, I'm sorry. And then under that name was Pete Hampton. And underneath all the names, it said, killed by a mob, August 19th, 1901. And I got sick in the pit of my stomach, thinking about what these people must have been through. And then I'm thinking, well, they must have deserved it. They were wild people, right? That's what I heard. So I went back to the articles, and I found a news article from a Missouri paper that actually told the facts. And the facts were this. It's an old story. Will Godley was accused of raping and murdering a white woman. He was put in jail awaiting trial when the townspeople came to the jail and broke him out, dragged him through the city streets to the downtown hotel, and tried to force him to confess. And when he wouldn't, they hung him, and then they riddled his body with bullets. The townspeople then went to the part of town where all the black people lived, to Will Godley's uncle's house. That was French Godley. French was there with his stepson, Pete Hampton, and the crowd tried to make them come out of the house, but these men were not giving up the house. And so a firefight ensued, and the townspeople burned that house down with French and Pete in it. Then the crowd moved on to the other black neighbors and said, if you don't get out of town by 3 a.m., we can't be responsible for what happens to you. So all those black people left Pierce City, Missouri, and they went their separate ways. One of those people who left was French Godley's brother. His name was Wiley Godley. And he settled in different places around the U.S., but he found his way here. He reestablished his life, he married, and he had children. One of them was Mary Jane Godley. She had Geneva. That's my mom. And so my daughter's 16, and I don't tell her that story with shame or with whispers. Because while those are the facts of our story, that's not our whole story. The story behind that is that French Godley was president of the Colored Voters Association. Maybe that's why I find myself at the polls anytime there's a vote for a dog catcher to president. And then I found out that those women, that of the men who were killed, They were black women. In 1901, they sued the townspeople for their loss. I figure maybe that's why my daughter has this deep sense of justice and will stand up for people no matter what. There's no monument to any of these folks, but I found out what I needed to know, and I know where we come from.
And that was Rochelle Fritch telling a much more serious...
Yeah, definitely. I have never taken that deep dive into family history, but you never know what you're going to find out, you know?
It's such an interesting conversation to have, like what needs to be passed down in your legacy and maybe what doesn't need, and who is the captain of that information and such. So I applaud her for being curious and having a desire to really dig in there and find out so she can pass it down to her next generation.
Now I'm curious about doing research on my own family.
Well, please keep us informed.
Or we'll keep it a secret, one or the other.
Right. So really quickly, again, Milwaukee Sculpture Exfabula Partnership, the sculpture tours happening again this weekend, final weekend, probably until next year. We'll see how this goes. Fantastic event. If you want to figure out how to get tickets to this or anything story related, please go to exfabula.org.
And if you want to hear today's stories again, share them with friends and family. You will find it at wuwm.com. And we'll be back with more stories next weekend.
Hooray!